Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Now, as we wait for Shohei, let me update you on this. If there's anything that his interpreter, Ipe, loves more than gambling, allegedly, it might be lying, allegedly. Now, we didn't find out much new information over the weekend about the actual gambling debt repayment at the center of the Shohei scandal, but we did find out that his translator will apparently lie about almost anything and everything, and apparently has lied about almost anything and everything. It's become pretty clear that one of the reasons why it's so hard to get any of the facts straight on this whole Shohei translator gambling scandal is that apparently Ipe does not get the facts straight. Period. Like, as a general rule, he doesn't really do facts.
So get your facts straight.
Which is pretty brutal. It's a pretty brutal characteristic or trait for a translator. I mean, wouldn't you think that a translator's most important job would be accuracy? Like, that's the most important thing, right? Because, you know, it's the job. Translating what somebody else says as accurately as possible is the job. Unless, of course, you stole $4 million plus from that person, in which case you might not translate anything accurately at all. Now, again, I don't know what happened. I'm still not sure whether it was story A, where Shohei covered his buddy's gambling debts, or story B, where Ipe stole the money and Shohei had no idea that he was gambling or that the money had been stolen. Or maybe the third story or something in between. But what does seem pretty clear is that Ipe has a proclivity for changing stories. He's done it way too many times to be comfortable or believable. And he is comfortable telling way too many versions of the story. And he clearly plays it way too fast and way too loose with the facts to be anybody's translator, let alone the translator for one of the most famous and influential athletes on the entire planet. I mean, going back to what I said earlier, this guy even lied about graduating from college. He says he graduated from UC Riverside, except UCR debunked that. They not only debunked that, they said that he never even attended. They've got no record of him being there. Uh-oh! That's not awkward or anything. Another member of the UC system, UC family, guy that I love, Eric Burns, in very graphic terms, was on the X platform asking, who the bleep lies about going to UC Riverside? Right? EB. Like I said, I'm just relieved that it was Riverside and not Santa Barbara, because that would have been a reason to go. Then again, UCSB would have never let this dude run around claiming he's one of us. We would have nipped that crap in the bud. That doesn't fly with us. I mean, Riverside, sure. Santa Cruz, maybe. No offense, Alvy. But not the Gauchos. He knew better. That guy was not going to lie that he went to UC Santa Barbara, because nobody would believe it. We'd check up on it. We wouldn't let that go. Probably would have been better off going with something like UC Merced. Or Santa Cruz, Alvy. Clearly, that liar is not Gaucho material. He's not, well, whatever the Riverside mascot is either. They debunked it. You gotta love people. Like, it's bad enough if you pull out just short of graduation. Sorry about that, Highlanders. I mean, it's one thing, like, if you come up a quarter or a few units shy, that's bad enough. If you don't graduate, you don't have a diploma, don't put it on your resume. But to not have ever attended the school at all and saying that you're a graduate. But then again, why is that so surprising? He also lied about his professional credentials. He lied about working as a translator for the Red Sox in 2010 prior to meeting Shohei. He probably went to Team Shohei and said, yeah, I work for the Red Sox. I've done this. He also lied about working as a translator for the Yankees during spring training in 2012. I mean, Team Shohei probably sat this guy down, looked at his resume and said, Says here you went to UC Riverside. Yep. Says here you also translated for the Boston Red Sox. Yep. And the Yankees. Yep. Okay. All we need is Shohei to sign off on this and we're good. That's a lot of lies. Dude, I think that you're confusing translation with making crap up. I mean, is this dude, how do we even know he's a translator? Because once you tell that many lies, then we have to assume that everything coming out of your mouth is a lie. Or in the very least, question anything you say because you keep lying. Are you even an interpreter? Do you even speak Japanese? Is that a lie too? Do you even know Shohei? Well, yeah, actually, you ripped him off, allegedly, so you must know him. I don't know if you know him, but apparently you know his routing number and his bank account, allegedly. I think we already think we barely know anything about Shohei. Imagine if everything we've heard about this guy came through Ipe, and Ipe just made it all up. It sounds ridiculous, but he's lied about so many other things. How can we trust anything from that dude right about now? And yo, Team Shohei, I mean, bad enough mistake to run this guy out to ESPN.com and let him say what he wanted to say. But maybe long before any of it got to that, maybe you'd run a background check. It's not that hard to do. Like, I get the Angels maybe not doing some enormous check on the guy because he already was with Shohei. He came with Shohei. But shouldn't you do a check on an employee? Maybe a basic resume check? Like, make sure that any part of the resume, any part of it is legit? I mean, I can understand how maybe it slipped through the cracks with the Angels for 6 years. What I don't get is how he got hired in the first place. Forget due diligence. It seems like Team Shohei did no diligence on this one. Their diligence was, well, the guy says he translates. He says he worked for the Red Sox. He says he worked for the Yankees. He says he's a UC guy. Damn. Impressive. We're sold. You're hired. Now, of course, the conspiracy theorists are all going to say it's all part of the smokescreen, that Shohei is the degenerate, that it's all a campaign to make Ipe look shady and guilty. Maybe, because the dude absolutely looks shady and guilty. It absolutely is shady to lie about your college degree. It absolutely is shady to lie about your previous employment and your resume, obviously. It's not the kind of thing that totally innocent fall guys do, right? It's actually exactly kind of the thing that reckless crooks who rip off millions of bucks and run up massive gambling debts do, right? It'd be much easier for me to put on my tinfoil hat and sit with you conspiracy theorists had we not caught this guy in so many lies already. But I know. For some of you, you've already made up your mind because the conspiracy theory is just so much more fun and it's going to get you so much more run. So you're going to go with that. For some of you, Shohei is Pete Rose, Michael Jordan, Phil Mickelson, and 99's wife all rolled into one.
You know, toughen up.
He'll never be able to shake the conspiracy theories, so he may as well lean into them and embrace them. Shohei's walk-up music for Dodger Stadium in his debut Thursday should be the X-Files theme. Then he could come out for his first Dodgers AB in LA with his helmet wrapped in tinfoil. Let's talk for a minute about O'Reilly Auto Parts, because they're in the business of keeping your car on the road and offering helpful service and parts knowledge that you need for all your maintenance and repairs. They have thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. And they can also test your battery for free. If it needs to be replaced, they will help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. When you need a specialty tool to finish the job, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and ask about their loaner tool program. Simply pay a refundable deposit and borrow the right tool, then get your deposit back when it's returned. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto, do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Rome. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/Rome. Personally, I'm still trying to figure out what the hell is really going on here, what actually did happen, because we've heard like four versions of the story, and none of them are convincing. Shohei is supposed to speak today. We'll probably get next to no clarification or no information from that, but maybe he says something that finally makes some sense. We can only hope. But I've got a feeling this is going to get worse before it gets better, and we're not going to get any resolution anytime soon, not with the feds involved, and not with the MLB finally getting around to its own investigation. Not that I expect MLB to ever do anything with Shohei unless he actually did bet and bet on baseball. The only thing I know for sure is that Ipe is all about lying. It really looks like he also really likes to gamble. But I know without a doubt that he absolutely loves lying out his ass. I don't know about the gambling, but I feel pretty convinced about the lying. Never mind the sports book. If there was a lying book, Ipe would be posted up all day, every day, taking that lying book for all it's worth. They'd ban him from every lying book in town. He'd be walking around with disguises, trying to sneak into the lying book so he can lie and keep getting paid. Dude, you lie so much, you don't even know you're lying anymore. A lying book. He'd crush that. He'd be known all over town. Yeah, T-Pay. There'd be pictures of him up in the lying book, like in the lunchroom. Don't let him in. Don't let him in. He'll take all our money at the lying book. Allegedly. My man, keep the UC system out your mouth. We're not having it. I'm not having it. Albie's not having it. Eric Burns obviously is not having it. Quote, who would lie about going to UC Riverside? Reminds me of my good buddy Tom Tolbert. When he played for the Clippers, he used to listen to the show back in the day, and he called up, and he wanted to be on. And there used to be moron clones that would try and pretend to be people they weren't to try to get on, to try to jerk with us. So I had my call screener at the time run through a bunch of questions to Tommy T, and he dutifully answered four or five. And then he finally goes, dude, who would lie about being Tom Tolbert? Put me on with Rome. Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anybody? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call. Get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. My guest is Rick Barnes. Rick, it is great to have you back. How are you?
Hey, great, Jim. Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing well. Coach, great talking to you. So, Rick, when you and I spoke in February, you were talking about how tough it is to stack wins, especially playing in a conference as tough as the SEC. So that being said, how proud of you are you, or how proud are you of your guys for winning their first outright regular season SEC title since 08 and reaching your second straight Sweet 16?
Well, Jim, you know, every league talks about how tough their leagues are, and they really are. I don't care. Even when I was a head coach at George Mason and the Colonial. I know how hard it was to win games in that league. But think about our league this year. Going into the last week of the regular season, there was a possibility that there could be a five-way tie for first place. And for us to be able to come out on top there, we won it by one game. And I think it was a four-way tie for second place. But, you know, I'm really proud of the effort that these guys did just because of they stuck together. You know, we had a tough stretch, you know, there with the way the league had. They wanted the top teams to play each other so we could help each other, possibly with the NCAA tournament seedings and all that. But we stayed with it. We did not play well at all in the SEC tournament, but I think what we've taken from that game is we were not shooting the ball well, and we got totally away from our game plan, and it turned really ugly for us. And since that, our last two games, we've really stayed together.
Rick Barnes is joining us. You know, Rick, I'm so glad you mentioned George Mason. I was actually going to ask you about that. For instance, your first head coaching job was at George Mason in 1987, and you've been a part of some really memorable tournament runs over the years. I know playing deep into March never, ever gets old, but given how long you've done this and the perspective you must now have, does it actually get better? Does it mean even more to you now than it did earlier in your career?
I think it does in the fact that you realize the longer you do it, how hard it is just to get to the tournament. And I've said it every year, and I think people laugh about it probably. You don't take it for granted. I mean, I've had some great coaches on my staff, great players that never got a chance to play in that tournament, and they talk about it with the team. Justin Gainey, our associate head coach, had a great career at NC State. He said, "Hey, guys, I never got to go dancing in the NCAA." And it's much harder than you think, and because I've had teams that they scratched and clawed just to get in it, you get there, you still want more, obviously, and every round gets more difficult. But it's something that I do. As I'm older, I realize it that it's not easy to get there, and when you get there, it's tough to keep moving too.
You bet. Rick Barnes joining us. I mean, nothing's easy. Nothing is ever easy, and especially this time of year, and Saturday was no exception. If you were to go back to that, you were able to grind out a tough win over Texas. A lot of times when you think of your squad, we think of the firepower created by SEC Player of the Year, Dalton Knecht, but how pleased were you with how they played on the other end of the floor, forcing those 17 turnovers?
Well, that was the game for us. Those extra 10 possessions we got were because, again, we went back and scrubbed it out when we got back, and we know some of those shots we've got to make them. But hey, that's part of the game. But the way we did do what we did defensive, we had three really critical breakdowns late when we were up. And we talked about that. You know, we had no pass transition basket, overran a closeout, and then we missed a block out that we survived. But you're always trying to get better. But the fact is, you know, from start to finish, our guys were locked in, and they did not let the fact that we were missing shots affect us on the defensive end, and that was really the difference in the game.
Tennessee coach Rick Barnes joining us. You know, Rick, you and I had so many conversations when you were at Texas. You had such a great run there and a long run there. Before the game with Texas, you said you would, quote, rather be playing someone else, end of quote, other than the program where you were so successful. Given the relationships you must still have with members of their staff, what was it like for you to go up against them? And because you were there so long, did that win carry any additional personal significance?
You know, Jim, I've been away from Texas for 9 years, but Chris Del Conte, the AD there now, he and I started talking about coming back, and when the Irwin Center was going to be closed down, and you know what, I did that really for my grandchildren, and because I wanted my grandson to have a chance to sit on the bench with me, and I said I'll play the game if he can sit beside me on the bench, and he did, and they won that game, and they returned the game the following year here in the Food City Center. We won it, and then this year. But you really think about it, those guys, for the most part, the guys on the bench had been with me longer than my current staff, and they know me. I watched those guys grow up as well as when I was growing up. And then Chris Ogden was the very first high school player we recruited at the University of Texas, and He's been on both of my staffs there and came here, then became a head coach, and then went back to Texas. And he went back along with Rodney and those guys. Their thing was they wanted to get our family back together, which I'm proud of that. And again, it's tough. I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's not, because I've got so much respect for those guys, because they helped me along the way in ways that you can only imagine. But again, I would prefer not to do that, but it seems like that's something that the NCAA likes to do. They like to put those stories together.
That's what they're here for. They love that. Rick Barnes joining us. You know, Rick, I'm sure my listeners right now are like, enough, Rome, get to Creighton. But you just said something interesting to me, and it kind of hits home, because we are now, my wife and I, Janet, we're now empty nesters. So we've got one son who graduated from Wisconsin this past year, and I've got another one that we sent to Boulder who's a freshman. So it's all so interesting and so different. I'm really curious, what was it like for you to have your grandson on the bench?
Well, I mean, I love him, you know, dearly, and I think it speaks volumes for our program that, you know, wasn't worried about one thing that would happen on the bench that I wouldn't want him, or certainly his mother wouldn't want him to be a part of, and I think that goes back to our kind of the players that we have here and what they've done here to try to really build a program at the University of Tennessee. But you know, as you get older, Jim, you know, you realize, I mean, what we do with basketball, that's what we do. That's our job, but that's not who we are. And who we are really the people around us, the people that have been a part of our life, people that God's brought into our lives. And I'm just thankful and blessed that God's brought so many wonderful people into my life, and certainly so proud of my family and my son, my daughter, father, you know, son-in-law, and daughter-in-law for the kids that they're raising. And it really is honestly one of the most important things in my wife, Candy, and I's life now.
Rick Barnes, my guest. Rick, that's such a key point what you made. It's not the first time I've heard that, but it's so, so important. Quote, basketball is what we do, but it's not who we are. Is that something you've always known, or is that something that maybe took you a minute or two to figure out?
Oh, no, I drifted away from that where I'm somewhat made it an idol, and I hate myself for it. I've gone back and apologized to players in the past because, you know, our motto here is it's not about me, and the times in my life when I look back on it, when I made it about me, it was really just selfishness on my part. And I'm just blessed and lucky that my daughter and son had a talk with me and told me where they thought I was from a standpoint with my relationship with God. And I knew they were right. I wish I could go back and do over, but I can't. But from that point forward, I said, I'm going to live every day I can to be an example for Christ and see where that leads us.
Interesting, right? It sounds like the family did a little basketball intervention.
They did that. That is a true statement.
We're talking to Rick Barnes. So the club is still far from a one-man show. Like, you think about Dalton Connect. In fact, you and I spoke last time. We talked about his backstory. You knew that he could score before he got there, but did you know what kind of a monster you were truly getting in him? I mean, did you see him coming in and just taking over as many games as he has?
No, not at all. And I don't think he saw that either. Jim, when we were talking, he simply said to me, I want to be part of a program, a winning program. Would love to play in the NCAA tournament, but most importantly, I want to get better as a player and do what I can do to help the team win. He never once asked about an NIL, didn't ask about how many minutes he's going to play. He said, I want to be a part of it. And after coming here, you know, we knew he had some other visits set up. He was supposed to go to Indiana. From there, I think he was supposed to go to maybe Kansas, and maybe North Carolina was on, and someone else was on the radar too. But he left, called the next day, and said, "This is I want to be a part of the program." But no way could we expect what he did. And he would tell you the same thing. I was talking to him yesterday, and I said, have you ever had games where you score like that? He said, I had a couple, but nothing like this. And because I'm talking to him about the light right now, because there's so much focus on him, and I want him just to stay calm and who he is, not let it get overwhelming by him. And he's such a great kid, and he wants to do well. But, I mean, he couldn't imagine it, and I can't even imagine myself the spotlight that's been on him, how he's handled it the way he has, because he's never had the kind of attention that he's gotten the last couple months, and he's handled it in just a magnificent way.
I think that's such an awesome point you just made. Like, is he just built for it? Did he learn that? Did you help coach him on that? How is he handling all that?
Well, you know what? I think the thing is, I think he's playing the game for the right reason. He keeps talking about, and I say this simple. He's very simple in his approach to things. You know, he's a very humble person. If you met his family, you would understand who he is. But he loves the game. Like I can tell you, we're off today. We practiced yesterday. I can assure you, last night at somewhere between 9:30 or 10 o'clock, he was in the gym shooting the basketball. And at 10:30, quarter 11, he was in the ice tub. I can assure you that, and it will happen again today. He's just focused on what he wants to do as a player, and it's been hard. I mean, you know, I've asked him to really play defense in a way that no one's ever asked him to do it, and yet, offensively, I mean, now, hey, you know as well as I do, you got a guy that can do that. You start scheming to try to get him the ball, but you also know your opponent's trying to scheme from him not getting it, and putting pressure on him. So he's had to adjust to different kind of defenses, some of it being very physical, some of it just being double teamed, some of it with 10 guys looking at him, 10 eyes looking at him. And it's really a real testament to him and his family for him to stay as humble and as calm as he has through all this.
Hey, Rick, I'm inspired. I love that. I love hearing that. I think that's great. So before I let you go, you've got Creighton coming up, and obviously that's a team that is tournament tough. They've got a number of key guys back from last year's Elite Eight team. Anything jump off the film as you prepare to battle them as you watch and do your research?
Well, before we even started, I've got so much respect for Greg McDermott. You know, he was at Iowa State and when I was at Texas and we coached against each other. First of all, just one of the nicest, most wonderful people you'd ever want to be around, but a great basketball coach. I mean, a great basketball coach. Offensively, I mean, every time I coached against him, I took something from the game because he's terrific. He really is. But he knows his team, and you know they don't foul. They believe in the three or the layup, and they'll maybe shoot a few mid-range jumpers. But the fact is, they extremely well coached, and we're going to have to play great basketball to move on.
No doubt about that. He's going to be on the show a little bit later on today, and I agree with everything you just said. He is a great coach. He's a great dude. They're a very good player. However, they have to deal with you guys as well. That is a great, great matchup, a Sweet 16 matchup on Friday in Detroit. Rick Barnes is the head coach of Tennessee. Rick, I appreciate you again. I appreciate the relationship, and thanks so much for making time. That was great, Rick. I really appreciate it.
Again, as always, appreciate you, and God bless you.
So let me tell you about something. The other day, I come across a product that all of us should be carrying around. It's amazing. It's something different for fresh breath. It is an incredible product called Zelman's Minty Mouth. And guys, it is a game changer. If you're up in the grill of somebody else and you're making your case for whatever it is, make sure your breath is fresh. Zelman's cleans your breath in a way that other mints don't and can't because it's not just a mint. It's a functional breath freshener capsule that you swallow. It's clinically tested against the toughest offenders, even garlic and onions. You just pop two or three in your mouth, suck the minty coating, then swallow the capsule for the confidence of fresh, clean breath that lasts for hours. The product is nothing. The product is like nothing else you've ever tried. It fights bad breath in your mouth. It then goes right down to your gut. This is the ultimate hack to get rid of coffee, garlic, or smoker's breath. You're going to like having the confidence of long-lasting fresh breath, or you get your money back guaranteed. These folks will give you your money back. Not that you're going to want it, but they will. They've got free shipping if you order three packs or more, and trust me, you're going to want more. And nobody likes to pay for shipping. Go to Zelmans.com right now. That's Zelmins.com. Right now, you'll get 15% off when you use the promo code ROME. Zelmins.com. You do have to use the code ROME to get your 15% savings, ROME. 1-800-636-8686. All right, so it should be one of the quietest weeks in the NFL calendar. But we all know nobody knows how to grab an offseason headline like the NFL. So nobody should be surprised that The Shield has people freaking out on the daily about rule changes in March. Yesterday, it was the new hip drop tackle. And I'm not just talking about fans. I'm talking about players. I'm talking about former players. Everybody's got an opinion. Yesterday, the new hip drop tackle. Today, the brand new kickoff rule. Yesterday, it seemed like everybody was so pissed and butthurt and bent
about the hip drop rule. Even the NFLPA was protesting. Think about that for a minute. A rule that's supposed to make the game safer for players, and the NFLPA is like, nah, we're not in favor of this at all. From what I can tell, the reaction to the new kickoff has been more positive. And I happen to like the new kickoff rule better. Mostly just because the ref show is going to have a much tougher time ruining that rule. That's my first thought anytime there's a new rule introduced. How is it going to impact the ref show? How hard is the ref show going to have to work to enforce this rule? Do they have any chance at all? How much is this new rule going to ask of the ref show? That's where my mind goes. Because they never seem to do well with new rules. Or any rules, for that matter. I mean, can you imagine the ref show enforcing the hip drop? What a nightmare that's going to be. And that's part of the NFLPA's argument. That there's going to be so many penalties, so many fines, they're not even going to be able to deal with it or call it. It's going to be a nightmare all the way around. And I agree with that last part. It's going to be a nightmare. We know it. We can all see it coming. The new kickoff rule, though, is just that. It's a new kickoff format. Much more difficult for the Zebras to botch the hell out of. And when I say a new kickoff format, I mean totally new. I mean, kickoffs in 2024 are going to be unrecognizable to longtime NFL fans. However, very familiar to XFL fans. Man, the NFL will take from anybody, even the XFL. It will be very, very familiar to you XFL fans, all 12 of you. Because the league actually ripped the format from the XFL. Here is the format. During the 24 season, kickers will continue to kick from the 35-yard line. But the other 10 guys on the kickoff team will line up at the receiving team's 40-yard line. At least 9 members of the return team will line up in a setup zone between the 35 and 30-yard lines. Up to 2 returners can line up in a, quote, landing zone between the goal line and the 20-yard line. So, I know that sounds confusing. Essentially, the coverage team and the return team are going to line up about 5 yards from one another. On the return team side of the field, the kicker is going to be all alone at his own 35. The returner or returners will be all alone behind their own 20. Like I said, massive, massive change. The point of the change, at least according to the league, is to create more returns while lowering concussion rates. And both those things sound good to me. I'm all for it. More excitement, fewer head trauma injuries. That makes a lot of sense. But for the record, so did banning the hip drop tackle. We've all seen a dude get hurt with a hip drop tackle. We've all had the same thought. At least most of us, I thought, did. Man, that seems pretty dangerous. Like, if they could get rid of the horse collar, why is that allowed? Like, that dude just sat on that dude and snapped his legs. That's okay? How is that allowed? That seems like a pretty dumb play. Nobody enjoys seeing one of their own go down because of a hip drop tackle. In fact, when it happens, it seems like everybody's saying, hey man, you got to get rid of that. You got to get rid of that. Except when they finally did get rid of it, everybody said the same opposite thing. Terrible rule. Terrible rule. Put flags on them. Where's the game going? What's it going to look like in 5 years? Personally, again, I don't think the idea behind the rule is that bad. My worry is more enforcement, because the ref show can and will ruin any rule. So, of course, they can and will ruin this rule, because the language for this rule is so bleeping convoluted. Right from the jump. You think people are still confused about what is and isn't a catch? You think the ref show is still confused about what a catch is? Wait until they try to wrap their tiny brains around this language in which the league describes a hip drop tackle. This, I mean, some of you might be like, Okay, first things first, what is a hip drop tackle? Great question. This is how the league defines a hip drop tackle. Quote, when a defender grabs a runner with both arms and unweights himself by swiveling and dropping his hips and or lower body, then lands on the runner and traps his legs below the knee. Where's Ipe to translate that for me? Yeah, thank you very much for clearing that up, fellas. Thanks for putting that in terms that absolutely nobody anywhere, including the refs, can understand. Quote, unweights himself by swiveling? Unweights himself by swiveling. The hell is that supposed to mean? Unweights himself by swiveling. I mean, do they go out of their way to make this thing as confusing as possible? Unnecessarily confusing? In the end, the last part will be the key, I think. The part that says, lands on the runner and traps his legs below the knee. Part. That's how we'll be able to spot a hip drop. That's probably what the ref show is going to have to key on, especially since there's no way they're ever going to figure out what unweights himself by swiveling means. Classic ref show. Take what should be an obvious rule covering a blatantly dangerous play and make it so convoluted and confusing that enforcement becomes near impossible. Remember, we're still not absolutely clear on what a catch is. But that's what they do to every single rule. That doesn't make the hip rule a bad rule. It just makes it another rule for the ref show to butcher. Good luck enforcing that rule. And of course, defensive players are pissed. Because the only significant rule changes involve defensive players. Defensive players will have you believe these rule changes do not make the game safer. They make the game more difficult for them. They'll ask you, when was the last time there was a rule change that made the game more difficult for the offense? And they're right. Every single year, the league does something that makes the defense's job tougher and the offense's job easier, all in the name of, quote, player safety. Defensive players are like, what about our player safety? How come they can still chip on us? What about our player safety? I see both sides. The league does need its stars on the field. Defensive players will say, all right, you lost Mark Andrews. Overreaction much? Guys get hurt. But the NFL will point to their studies, which says it's not just Mark Andrews. That we're seeing these number of tackles go up and up and up. And defensive players will say, right, because we can't go high anymore. We can't go high anymore. We can't use or lead with the crown of our helmet. We have to find a way to get these guys on the ground. What else can we do? So the league will say, we need our stars on the field. We're trying to make the game more safe. And defensive players will say, yeah, but at what cost? Now we have an unlevel playing field. But again, my biggest concern is the ref show. I'm fine with the rule, but I'm not fine in thinking the refs can enforce this because they won't. They won't. The rule is not a disaster, but thinking that the ref show can consistently identify and enforce that will be a disaster. Which is why the kickoff rule is actually a reason to celebrate, because they can't jack that up. That's how you know it's a good rule, if the refs can't jack it up. Where do you come out? I know I'm in the minority on this. People are freaking out about that rule. The only ones not freaking out about that rule are me and those who have suffered injury as a result of that rule or play. Anybody who's been hurt from that is fully in favor of the rule.
Let's talk for a minute about O'Reilly Auto Parts, because they're in the business of keeping your car on the road and offering helpful service and parts knowledge that you need for all your maintenance and repairs. They have thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. And they can also test your battery for free. If it needs to be replaced, they will help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. When you need a specialty tool to finish the job, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and ask about their loaner tool program. Simply pay a refundable deposit and borrow the right tool, then get your deposit back when it's returned. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto, do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Rome. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/Rome. Next up, Eric, what's going on?
Hi, Jim. How you doing? Thank you for taking my call.
You got it.
I want to talk to you about the ref show, as you call it. Jim, I think you're a little too hard on those guys. I really do. My brother is a ref, and he's an umpire. And the things that he tells me what happens on the field, in the basketball game, people are cheating all the time, and they don't call half the stuff. So I just want to say, give them a little bit of love and understand they're humans too. And I don't think the games will be as dramatic and controversial without it. If we had robots do all of that, we had nothing to talk about. But overall, on the human side, give them a break, Jim. They're just trying to do the best they can do. And I don't think you, or I can't say you, most people would never want to do that job. But they're trying the best that they can. I really do believe that. I'm out.
My brother, I appreciate you, and you can say me. I don't want to do that job. You absolutely can include me in that. I don't want that job. Let's go to Northern Michigan. Peter, right to the front. Peter, what's going on?
Hey, Jimmy. And it's an honor to speak to you. First time, long time. Remember you when you started your show at the Low Torch at the 690.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah, but so what my problem is with the rule is, you know, my dad played for Wisconsin, my brother played for Michigan. We, you know, when you, you know, either you're trying to tackle somebody or you're going to hit somebody, right? Now, I know they're trying to make it safe, but at the end of the day, I mean, what are we talking about? We're talking about, like, it, like you're trying to, some guy's trying to rip your head off at the end of the day. So tell me where I stand on that.
My man, I would love to tell you where you stand on that, but I have no freaking idea. I got a better idea, my guy. Next time you call, you tell me where you stand on that. The V resides in the fee. You know that. V, brother, what's up?
Timothy, something stinks. No, it's not Portland women's armpits or that sweat dripping down Kelly Clarkson's chafing thighs. Something stinks, man. It's not that smell from that poor toilet that Jeff in Richmond just Oppenheimered after his fifth Taco Bell run. It's you, Shohei. Shohei, you stink. Hey, Shohei, if you have nothing to hide and you're completely innocent, why didn't you take any questions yesterday? What were you afraid of? I mean, I know you and Ipe are close, like Bert and Ernie, but who gives their friend access to their bank accounts? It all smells fishy to me, Timothy. I believe it's the first story. Ohtani himself, his own camp, they came out and said that they gave Ipe the max payment from his account. That's Ohtani's words. The initial transfer said loan on it with Ohtani's own name on it. And it's not like they had to prove that first. Ohtani's camp admitted it. This smells fishy. I mean, even Julio Urias thinks this is eye-opening. Sandy Duncan can fully see what's going on here. But don't worry, Dodger dweeb. Manfred was going to protect your cash cow, and Ohtani will only get a slap on the wrist. It's already been fixed, Jimmy. You already said everything's fixed. Well, maybe, except that bridge. Unwar Ipe and Mark Davis.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Dude, you were trending for maybe your best call ever. You were trending for one of your top five calls ever, V. But you couldn't help yourself, could you? You just had to. You said it yourself, Jimmy. Everything is fixed. Well, except that bridge.
Good night!